Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Aki's here. Chris is here. Prunell's here. Andy's here. How is everybody doing?
Wonderful.
All right.
Pretty good.
All good.
I think I'm going to eat some candy soon.
Doing great.
What kind of candy are you going to eat?
Oh, candy.
I got Swiss cake rolls and Nutty Buddy bars or whatever they're called.
Not candy.
It's chocolate. That makes it candy.
That's snack bars.
Which is candy.
Candy's candy.
Exactly. It's a candy bar. That's what a snack bar is. It's a candy bar. That's filled with chocolate and sugary goodness, which makes it candy.
Andy, how have you been? How's things going?
Pretty good, man. Just addicted to Clover Pit. That's about it. My life now.
How is that?
Really good. It's, I don't know why. It's got just a good appeal to it. I mean, it's very much one of those games of like, let's do one more run. So I'm sucked into that.
Was that the slot machine one?
Yeah. Yeah, it's it's like Balatro, but with a slot machine. I mean, you're just trying to get like combos, and you've got your slot machine symbols, and you're basically collecting like little lucky charms that help you get more of the symbols. So, like half the time, you know, I'll do like a Clover run, and I'll try to find lucky charms that boost it so that I have more percentage to gain clovers. And if I get clovers, then their price increases too. So you're just trying to get like,
I knew you were interested in that one. I got some emails about it. I didn't think anyone cared about it.
What are we talking about? Cause I zoned out and then I heard lucky charms and I really want to eat cereal now. What are we talking about?
We're talking about a game called Clover Pit. It's literally just like a slot machine game. It's kind of, like I said, it's kind of like
gambling.
How in Balatro, you're like trying to find combos.
Clover Pit. Yeah. I'm curious about that, but I don't want to pay for it, but I want to play it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cheap game. It's like $10 or something like that. You know, not that the price matters, but it is like, I've already put in like 6 hours into it. I'm playing it right now too. And it's literally just like you're playing a slot machine, but imagine playing a slot machine and then you get little charms, and the charms help you get more of a certain symbol, you know, and then you can also boost the amount of like coins you get from that symbol as well too. And then there's like there's a lot more to it than that. I'm giving you like the very, very basic version, but it's fun. It's addictive, and it's definitely one of those games where you're like, all right, let's just do one more run, you know, and then it's 6 hours later. So it's awesome. It's fun.
If it comes that in, Purnell, you're clover. On the job.
All right. That pit be clover.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of people play it too, and it like gets really hype, like with the right people, you know. I was playing it last night, and people rated over from other streams that were playing it as well too, and nice. Everybody in there just gets hyped, dude. They want to see you win, you know, and sometimes you pick the wrong charm and everybody is against you. So it's pretty cool. It's fun. I like it.
Is there any kind of Twitch integration to it?
Apparently there is. I'm not sure what that is. I actually just read about it earlier today too, so I totally missed out on anything if there was. I'll probably play it tomorrow if I stream, and maybe figure that out too, but yeah, it's it's pretty much like if you don't get the amount of money, like you're in debt, then you die. So you have to start all over. But it's, I don't know. There's a lot to it that it takes a while to explain, but you start getting it and figuring it out. So I'm still figuring it out. I had a lot of people help me last night, like, oh, don't buy that one. That was a dumb move, you know, kind of thing. So it's cool.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I'm interested in it.
Yeah, dude, you should try it out, man.
Well, made a request. We'll see what happens. Nice. Chris, how are you? How's things with you?
Hey, all right. I was just playing some Dragon Quest 3 HD 2D Remake. Finally got restarted back on that one since it came out on, or since it's, you know, upgraded on Switch 2 as well. I downloaded that and it's like really nice.
Are you excited for 1 and 2 coming out?
Yeah, I'm like, I better get on those once they get out. So I was like, I should beat 3 then, because I need to see how they link them all together, like if they do anything kind of different with that. So and I'm not 7? Like rushing through it or anything, but I was already 30 hours in. So it's like, I mean, what?
I said, and then 7.
And then 7, yeah. Well, I'll beat 7 a third time. Why not?
What other remasters do you think they're working on at this point?
I would hope 9. I would also like for them to bring 10 offline to the US so that we can have, you know, the full set of like the newest Dragon Quests. But, you know, they're probably working on like 4, 5, and 6, or, you know, maybe doing some updated version of like the DS versions of those, since they've been kind of, you know, they came out with those like 20 years ago or whatever, and then also did them for mobile. And so I'm like, unless they're like, I don't know, it's hard to know what they're like really working on, but I know that that's something that they have access to, like, or that, you know, they wouldn't have to like just completely build from the ground up. But who knows? I mean, maybe they're gonna make 3 yet again.
Maybe in 3D.
Yeah, I know. 3 keeps getting re-released.
I would like to see 4 through 6 get a trilogy release. That'd be cool.
I'd be into that, because, like, we really... The DS version of 6 is the only one we have. I mean, I guess 5 as well, but 5's been remade on other things, too, so it's kind of like... But 6 is just, you know, has always been kind of like a dark horse of the series. Even the fan translation is still incomplete.
Jeez.
Like... There's not even a complete fan translation of 6. The only thing we really have is that DS/mobile version.
I think the smart money for them, and the one that they should announce next, would be a current gen remaster, remake, whatever, of 8.
Yeah, 8 would probably be a good move, but, you know, and especially since they did...
It's already in 3D. It's already, like,
well, it was already re-released on 3DS and is currently on mobile as well. So, like, it's a, you know, that one does follow the pattern of, like, but, you know, 7's really the only one they've top-down remade prior to 6, because, you know, 8, they just kind of added content and downscaled the polygons and whatnot. But, like, 7, they completely rebuilt. So I'm, like, kind of curious to know, like, you know, because they're doing the 7 rebuild again, and they've rebuilt it again. So it's kind of like they keep starting all over again with 7. So it's kind of like, is that the plan for like everything else? Because 1, 2, and 3 are remade in the HD 2D style. So it's kind of like, are they going to do 4, 5, and 6 that way? Or are they going to top down remake another one of the 3D ones? Because if they do, I would much rather have 9 than 8. 9 is really good, but it's stuck on DS. Like, it has never been re-released in any way, anywhere. Like, that's, you know, unheard of.
I think that one would take a lot more work, though. That's what I think
It originally fit on a DS cart.
I mean, like, sprucing up the visuals.
I don't think so. I think that they would just completely rebuild it like they did 7 twice.
I don't know.
But the bones are there for it to
just
be.
Bring them all.
Yeah.
Fuck, release 12 one of these days, please. That'd be nice.
Nah, you know, I'll wait on 12. I mean, they can, when Yuji Horii's happy with that one is when I'll be happy, because, you know, they've lost two of the pillars of the series. So, like, anything new going forward is going to be very different. And so they kind of really do need to kind of figure that out.
As long as the music is good the first time around, right?
Yeah. What do you mean good the first time around?
Dragon Quest XI.
Oh, with the MIDI? I didn't mind the MIDI. Oh, I think it's fine.
It sounded awful.
In fact, people now are starting to complain about how the orchestral version of the Dragon Quest XI soundtrack is a little too inconsistent in volume. Like, the MIDI version was at least pitched a little, you know, like, was, what do you call it, normalized a little bit better for volume, like, to go along with the game, whereas the orchestral version is just playing a recording of the orchestral music while you're out and about. So, like, even the MIDI version has its fans that much prefer it. I mean, I like them both, but I didn't mind the MIDI version. That never bothered me.
That was the one thing that kept me from playing it, because I thought it sounded so bad.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Ah, well. Aki, what have you been up to?
Playing review games. That's all I'm ever up to. I don't have time for anything else.
Nice.
I'm a loser. I understand.
There with you. Ronell, did you win your Mario Kart tournament?
What do you think? Of course I won.
What'd you win?
Yeah, it was just a gift card to the bar, but hey, the real prize was making people mad.
Hell yeah.
When people were in the room saying, get after him, kill him, and you're just like, whoop, 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 whoop. That's how you know you piss people off. You become the target. That's a tournament.
What is your strategy? Do you try, like, staying competitive the whole race, or do you hang back and, like, save some good stuff and then make a last-minute run to the front with good items?
I'm not confident enough at the game to do that. I'm trying to stay ahead the whole time. Though, I will admit, depending on the scenario, sometimes the guy will turn blue shells off, sometimes he leaves them on. But for the most part, I think this time he turned blue shells off, but last time he didn't, and I still won, so it balances out. But I prefer to just stay ahead. You're better off just fighting through the pack or just staying ahead of the pack and just weathering the storm. Because even though that people do say hang back on the third lap, use all your crazy items, I don't feel as though it's reliable. I'm not good enough at the game to have that be a reliable play. So
that's fair.
Now, battle mode, which is how they do the finale, is where I really kick ass, because you might say battle mode is completely random. I would agree with you. And yet somehow I consistently was doing well in battle mode. So it's like Mario Party. People say Mario Party is purely luck based. You can't win with skill. And I go, well, I mean, if you ask anybody in my social circle who's really good at Mario Party, they generally say me, followed by the game just comes up with bullshit stars like the 6'7" star or the black man with glasses star. That's just how it works. So, I mean, at the end of the day, that says Pernell's good at Mario Party. So, but it ended up being a lot of fun.
I think battle mode in Mario Kart takes more skill than luck, because you can dodge red shells if you're good.
Yes, you can. So
jump on the right spot and,
like, you believe it or not, though I may have pulled this off like once in my life, you are able to drift out of the direction of one too. Like, if it's coming right before it hits, if you drift out of a boost, you'll boost out of the way and it'll go off and break or whatever. I suck at that though. So no, my strategy is drag an item behind me. So like one race I had tonight, it was perfect. Like, I was about to get knocked out by a red shell, and I drove through an item box. I'm like, come on, roulette, stop rolling. And the thing was coming. It's like, ding, ding, ding. And like, boom, dropped the shell right where it was about to hit me. And it dropped. Everybody was like, holy shit. I was like, I know. I got lucky. But it's a fun time. And I like when people are like, the hell, man. Like, one person, Strab, was like, when it was all over, because she missed the finale, she's like, did you lose? You lost, right? I was like, hell no, I didn't lose. What do you think this is? I came here to win.
I'm a fucking winner.
Like, I only do it because when I can ham it up. When people are gunning for me to lose, I'll ham it up if I do well. I'm like, well, who think this is? You think I'm going to lose to you? Fuck out of my way. Please. But otherwise, I'm generally humble.
Anyway, we got some games we got to talk about this week. Should we dive into some reviews?
Let's do it.
Let's.
Aki, you ready? Because you're up first.
Oh, shit.
That's it.
Yeah, yes. I'm ready.
First game, Atom Fall, the Red Strain DLC, developed and published by Rebellion, released September 16th as DLC for Atom Fall for $19.99. Nestled in the hills away from the prying eyes of the locals lies Test Site Mariah, a secret research station built on the site of an old missile testing facility, has been shrouded in mystery ever since it opened. Something changed when the quarantine came into effect. The facility has fallen into more nefarious hands, who are keen to keeping its secrets for themselves. Now a route back into the facility has been located, and with it, the opportunity to finally get some answers. Aki, what is going on in the Red Strain?
All right. In this, you're playing as a dude who just woke up one day in a quarantined area of England. Some weird shit's going down. There's people that have turned into monsters and a big old rat problem. Oh, yeah. And robots that want to kill everybody. Woohoo!
Yay.
This is DLC for that. The DLC of this game, this is the second piece, they all take place during the actual campaign. So you can start the game and within a handful of hours, immediately jump into either of the DLCs.
So it's not like Assassin's Creed where you had to beat the game. This is just incorporated into the main game. You could tackle it whenever.
Correct.
Very good.
Yeah. It's really fantastic. The only problem with it is, well, at least with the first DLC, it was really hard to figure out exactly where to start it. This one, you're not going to have issues with that, because within like the first 10 minutes of playing the game, you're probably going to come across where you need to go for this DLC, which was pretty fantastic, realistically. Because the amazing thing about this is, once you get out of the very tutorial area, before you're likely to hit the first town even, you're probably going to hit a cave system that's in between the two. In that cave system is where you're going to find the way to get into this DLC. Every time I've started this game, I've gone to that cave system before I've done anything else. Not because I know there's something there, just because that's where the first trader in the game is. So that's where you can buy items for the first time. And before you meet him is where you can find the access point to the DLC. You might accidentally yourself into this DLC before you touch the first trader of the entire game.
Did you start a fresh game to see if you can do that?
Yes, and you can. Yeah,
and you can go immediately into the DLC, like right off the bat of the game.
Yeah,
does it?
You could do it with the first one.
Fuck you up incredibly.
It is a lot harder if you do it that way. There aren't any levels in this game at all. For any, like, none of the zones are like, oh, you should be this level for this zone. No, you get abilities that you unlock by buying little magazines. And as you level up, you get points that you can put into those. But you have to find them to basically buy those skills with the points. So many of them are randomized, like you can find them in shops sometimes, but they're randomized. As such, there's no like you need this for this level area or anything. I didn't say that.
I heard you say you need.
I did say I need. I hate you people. But yeah.
I remember firing up Atom Fall when we first got it, and I put maybe like 45 minutes into it before I started getting motion sick. And in that time, I went into like a single bunker and I had 3 magazines.
Yeah, that sounds about right. You heard nothing.
What?
So,
bless you.
Thank you.
I couldn't tell what it was. you so, fell out of your chair.
If only. I would have preferred that. You head into this new area, and basically this entire area has been quarantined because they took out some of this bad juju stuff that's in the main game and started testing on it and have created a mutated strain of it that is bad news. And realistically, there's some new enemies here, but most of the enemies, kind of like the first DLC, they're just slight reskins of standard enemies throughout the game. If you immediately start this DLC, it's going to be much harder than if you started up the game and then ran to the first DLC and started it immediately. Because a lot of this campaign is about robots. And robots fuck you up pretty quickly and easily. You really want to have some decent guns before you go in and start fucking around with robots, because they don't play games. You will be sent to do parts of the main campaign if you haven't done it yet, because there's some objects that you need in order to get real far into the DLC. Namely, there's a electric current redirection device that you need to obtain. You get that story pretty quickly, realistically, and you can get that item extremely quickly. So you need that in order to start this, because there's an upgrade to it, basically, that gives you some new abilities, which are really nice. They allow you to hack the robots and make them allies, which is one of the coolest abilities just in general, because robots are assholes, and anytime I can make them kill the enemy, that's a good day. Many of the enemies in this are reskins. There's ferals, which are the mutated people. They're in this one, they're infected ones.
Jacob's the mutated people. Aha!
I agree.
Got him.
The difference between ferals and the infected ferals are one thing and one thing only. The ferals glow blue. The infected ferals glow red. That's it. That's all there is. Then there's, you know, infected rats. Well, the difference between the rats and the infected rats are one glows blue and the other glows red. Starting to see a theme here.
The Bloods and Crips?
Oh, shit, yeah. Yeah, the main game
fucking
is all
gang
about the
warfare
one.
Of rats. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's insane.
Now, yeah, you get some slightly modified robots in this, as well as some brand new enemies. There's some weird bug creatures that are basically rats, realistically speaking, that attack you with swarms like the rats do. And then there's some new robotic enemies, which were interesting, and I fucking hate them all. There's a swarm of tiny robots that will climb up walls and stuff and come down and swarm you, kind of like rats, except for they can climb on walls and therefore are significantly more heinous. And now there's flying drones that will attack you as well, and they don't fuck around either. I don't like either of them, mostly because I'm just not used to shooting thing that's flying in the sky, because no other enemy does that in this entire game. But throughout this whole thing, you're in this new area that is, I'm going to say it's smaller because it doesn't have as much like square footage of an area to go through, but it has more verticality in it. So you have hills and buildings that have multiple floors and so on and so forth, which is very different from a good chunk of the base game and the first DLC, where there's big swaths of just flat lands that you can go across and stuff. So that was really interesting. I personally, that's not what I like in the game. I don't like the verticality because I'm a stealth player. I'm used to sneaking up on people and killing them. And when I have to climb up buildings to do that, that kind of sucks. Whereas if you're a running gunner, that's going to be great because you probably have an SMG and you're just running through the building, jumping up the stairs, shooting everybody. You get to the top, you pull out a sniper and you start blowing people's heads off. Like, it'd be great for that. Just not how I personally play the game. And while you're here, you're looking for new items that are basically like the batteries in the main game. You have to find a certain amount of batteries to unlock different areas of the interchange. In this one, you're finding brains that do much the same. They unlock new areas that you can get into in this DLC. So you're going to be very familiar with that mechanic. There are two different endings for this, and there's a handful of new weaponry and skills. There's, I think, three new skills in total. One of them gives you the ability to steal weapons from the giant mechs and carry them around like heavy turrets from like Halo and stuff, which is kind of interesting, not super useful for, again, my personal play style, because it makes you move real slow, but they are some strong fucking weapons. And then there's ones that just makes you take less damage from the red strain version of the mist that's around. New weapons, you get a couple silenced weapons, which are really cool because the rest of the game doesn't have any. You get a new knife, which has its own special animations that look really cool. You get a couple heavy weapons that you get from the robots, as well as a couple new grenades, one of which is really awesome. It's an electric grenade, and it kills things in a wide area because the electricity hits multiple targets and links between them, and it also stuns robots so that you can use your new 2.0 tool to hack them and turn them to an ally. Woohoo! There's also
kills in a wide area and shocks robot. Sounds like Jacob's farts. He'll be here later on. Let's talk about price on this one. It sounds like there is a lot in here. It is a $20 DLC package. It is not included in the previously released deluxe edition. This is a separate purchase. It is possible that when everything is all said and done, Rebellion will release a complete edition. But as of right now, it is $20. What do you think?
Generally for this, you're probably going to spend anywhere from 5 to 10 hours in this DLC to finish it. So I think it's a pretty good price point for what you're getting. So I'm totally for it. If you've liked the main game, if you liked the first DLC, you're definitely going to like this DLC. It was great fun. Getting some new weapons, some new endings. It's all fantastic. So yeah, I'm 100% for this. I really liked this DLC.
Does it require the first DLC, or could you just pick this one up?
You can just pick this one up if you want. I would suggest go ahead and getting it, too, just because it's also really fun.
Cool. Next up, Aethermancer, developed by Moirai Games, published by Off-Brand Games. It released September 23rd on Steam for $21.99. Monster taming meets roguelite. Become the Aethermancer and fight alongside mythical creatures. Explore the ever-changing fractured ruins, plan your moves in challenging turn-based battles, watch your monsters grow stronger from previous lives, and defy death. Ernell, what is going on in Aethermancer?
Okay, so the best way to describe Aethermancer is a combination of monster, like Pokemon, or just any general monster collector game. I feel like it's almost unfair to say specifically Pokemon, but it's the most recognizable one. So let's go with it then. Monster collector and like a general roguelike dungeon exploration game. Because in this title, you play as Syriax, a mage who is trying to, I guess the best way to describe it is like get to the center of the void and dismantle or shut it off or whatever. And he does this by progressing deeper and deeper within with the use of mythical creatures that he can summon and command in battle. during a general run, what happens is you start out with one aether or one creature, and that creature can be chosen from a series of three to start the game. But later on, you can increase the options by a series of actions that you can take. But once you choose that creature, you will undergo dungeon diving. Dungeon diving will take place of a series of biomes, each having a series of floors. And exploring them is not too complicated because they're essentially just general corridors, like pathways that branch off to each other, eventually leading to an end that has a series of selections you can take, which I'll talk about shortly. But while you're running through this, you'll obviously eventually get into a scuffle or a battle, if you will. And once that happens, that's when the genuine bona fide meat and potatoes of this game takes place. The combat. Each of your creatures can represent two elements associated with them, as well as a multitude of variations of types. So you have your basic earth, fire, wind, water, and then there is also wild. Wild that can be done. So you don't really get the representation of that, but it comes into play during attacks. And then types can be things like tank or burn or power. There's a lot of different types. Just know that they are variations and differentiations of elements, and they all do their own thing. In a battle, you will get an ability to choose a different one of a series of attacks you may have equipped on your monster. The attacks are accessible by way of an energy source called aether. Aether is earned by your monsters doing base attacks or from a multitude of different side effects that could take place during combat. Some of which can be due to the opponent's monsters, others by your monsters, and then others still items equipped to your monsters. If you have the resources available, say, for example, for fire aether, and your monster happens to know fire wave, you can cast fire wave and hit all the monsters on the side of the board for like 4x3 fire damage. That is 4 damage 3 times. Now, every monster that you fight also has a sort of, I guess, like a shield in a sense, like an energy shield or an element shield. If you hit the corresponding weakness of that shield enough times, you will break that shield and then in turn stagger the monster, thereby giving you a free turn to do as much damage as you can, and they are also in a bit of a weakened state, so you can do more damage. You defeat the monster, you will get two forms of experience in this game, not one. There's actually two. There's your base level experience, which is the experience that is only available per run. So once that run is over, that experience is starting from the ground up. And it's low number, so it might be like you might have like 2 experience points. Once you get 4 experience points, you'll level up, or so on and so forth. But then the other is called worthiness, and that is the thing that carries over between runs. It's a very slow buildup, but once you actually get it to level up, the monster's inherent stats will just get a solid bump, and that will be something that you can use in future runs. If you decide to pick that monster, they'll still have that particular buff that they get. The base experience points, however, when that levels up, you'll get to choose from one of 3 different like perks, I'll say, or traits. And those traits, or actions sometimes, will dictate pretty much the entirety of how you decide to battle, because this game is drunk on synergies. You will be linking things on top of things on top of things. I'm not even quite sure how to explain it in the context of this review, but a base example might be something like, okay, you have a fire chicken. The fire chicken has an ability where whenever he hits somebody with fire damage, he will ignite and get a power buff. Then you might have another monster who, whatever one of their allies gets a power buff, they inflict 3 poison on the monster with the lowest amount of poison stacks. And then you might have another monster that has the ability to inflict poison damage whenever a poison stack is inflicted on an opposing monster. So there's a lot of cycling that can take place. One of my favorites is Sidekick, where if one of your opponents, one of your monsters strikes, the monster with Sidekick can in turn combo and follow up with an additional attack for more boom bow. But the basic point is to make here is that there's a lot of things you're concerned about as far as like stat building, trait stacking, attacks that are built, which are, again, actions or attacks can be done based off the amount of aether you've generated by way of base attacks and effects. Wild aether can be used to substitute any of those. At the end of a section, you'll get the choice of, you know, just like a lot of how these games do, the typical format, you'll get the choice between like 2 to 3 different locations to go to, the following the preceding level, and they usually have different effects. Like, hey, you go this way, you'll meet the witch. You go this way, you might meet a merchant. You go this way, the drops for loot will be higher tier than normal. Stuff like that. Eventually you get to the end, fight a boss. The boss is a jackass who has a lot of hit points. They could attack twice per round. And even if you manage to stagger them, they will still manage to get one attack. In other words, you cannot stop the rock when the rock is smacking you back. And that's fun. That's why bosses are tougher. They're meant to be. Bosses are tough. But eventually, you'll also come across it. Before I talk about the eventually, in addition to the stuff I described, every section will also have various events that can take place in them. And engaging them will also, again, make your run better. An easy one to describe would be like elemental springs. And it might be, again, just like it says, a chasm looks like a geyser. You walk up to it, you get to choose one of two different run buffs where for the rest of the run, you'll get that perk. And they're usually elemental based. So you come across a fire spring, it'll be a two fire themed buffs or whatever. So you'll be doing a lot of that kind of cool stuff. And of course, when you die, you'll go back to the main hub and be able to spend the recurring currency being aether crystals, not to be confused with gold. And you can use those crystals along with a bunch of NPCs to better prepare yourself for future runs. Easy way to describe how I feel about this game. The synergies are fan-freaking-tastic. The monster designs are pretty freaking cool. And even though there is a lot to think about in the grand scheme of things, as you're actually playing the game, sometimes the thinking may just come down to, I know what I was thinking about when I chose the ability or the trait. But then once it's happening in battle, things are just popping off and I'm just happy about it. Whatever. Boom, boom, boom. Power buff. I don't know where it came from, but I planned for it 3 turns ago. So I'm cool with it. I don't know why it happened, but I know it happened. Whatever. It's a lot of fun to be had with that. If you thought Pokemon synergy was too simple, getting a little bit of this bad boy, you'll go nuts with it. Oh, I should also mention one thing I really did forget that is very important about the gameplay style, too, is hit points. The monsters have their own hit points, just like any other monster taming game. They take damage, they lose hit points, yada, yada, yada. However, after every battle, every time a monster gets hit, they take on corruption damage in addition to the regular damage. And after every battle, you will heal up to your max energy, max in air quotes, because your max becomes your HP max minus the corruption you've stacked up on your monster. So the next fight will be that amount of hit points and so on and so forth until you find a way to get rid of the corruption. This can be done by area events or from different skills or traits, but ultimately you have to be mindful of corruption. You can't just steamroll with a monster that has a high HP base because you will regret it. So now I think I've pretty much covered everything that needs to be covered, everything that you can discover on your own. But the thing that's worth noting is that this game is a ton of fun. The only downside I think I have to it, which isn't really a downside to this game, is just this type of game, is that the actual mazes themselves are pretty basic. You know, go here, go there, up, down, left, right. Oh, here's a thing. Got it. Here's a thing there. And then the only other thing, which could also go either way, runs can take a very long time. These are not short runs by any means. You can save during runs, so you're not committed till the end. But again, you will be playing one run for a fair bit of time before you die and start over. If you're okay with that, well, I think you'll have a lot to look forward to here, because you literally heard the only two real gripes I have about this game.
All right, well, it clocks in at $21.99. Give us your thoughts.
Buy this thing. It's worth your money, worth your time, and it's an early access, if I'm not mistaken, which means there's more sweetness to come. Hopefully, yep,
it is
more diverse. Yeah, it is. So get on board while the hiring is hot.
Yep,
the elevator is low.
In early access for approximately a year. They are planning a price increase midway through early access and another once it launches. So if you want to get in now for $21.99.
Get on this. Get up on this.
Rock on. Next up, Eartheon, developed by Ancient Corporation and Bitwave Games. Published by Limited Run Games, released September 18th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $19.99. Yuzo Koshiro's Eartheon is a side-scrolling space shooter developed natively for 16-bit systems by legendary Japanese developer Ancient Corporation, guides space fighter pilot Azusa Takanashi through 8 chaotic levels, each with their own unique environment, enemies, and boss fights to repel the alien invaders and save planet Earth. Andy, what's Earthion?
Well, so first off, like you said, Earthion has that classic 16-bit area style to it. With a little bit of push from modern technology, it's a gorgeous game to look at. I love the retro styles, and this one, just they do such a good job on this one. But everything from the ships, the enemies, the little blaster pixels, everything above it, the environments, it's all just beautiful. There's a lot of work that went into this, but... Even like the sides of the screen have that kind of classic CRTV look to it, or almost like the speaker plastic, you know, on either side, which is really cool. So it definitely like drives home all the way around, like that feel that you're playing a classic game, you know, or playing something on an old TV, you know. Modern technology has been awesome with this kind of stuff too, because it makes everything look so much more crispy, juicy looking, you know, all the movements from the enemies and weapons and stuff like that, and quick little cut scenes. It's so good to look at. But the one thing that kind of got me was like there's a layering of like the levels too, so like things are flying at you and like debris, for example, you know, and it's a little hard to like figure out what you're supposed to avoid and what you can kind of like pass through. But I'd say besides that, it's amazing to look at. But like you said, also it's a side-scrolling shoot 'em up. It carries a kind of story that would mimic, you know, like those area shoot 'em ups. Alien invaders come to the planet, and it's pretty much up to you to get rid of them. That's it, kind of in a nutshell, you know. I there's not really much more to it than that. You'll guide
Chris,
your ship,
which is a game that you're familiar with. When we got this in, like, I was only seeing stuff about it on Xbox. It is on all platforms. I didn't realize that. What do you know about Earthion? Because I know you are super knowledgeable about every shmup on the planet.
Well, on this one, I have not purchased it yet. I haven't digitally purchased it yet. I bought the limited run special edition physical. So I'll get to play this in like 3 years.
Nice.
All I know about it is that I've been following the project since Yuzo Koshiro first announced it, and you know, he's been showing off stuff from it forever, and including the soundtrack and everything. And yeah, it's really legit. But yeah, I haven't played it yet, but I definitely know about Earthion.
Very good. What was the price on the limited edition?
Oh hell. Let me see.
$7.99. Comes with a replica spaceship.
Yeah, looks like it was probably $99.99 for the collector's edition. Yeah. What did I buy it on? I bought it on Switch. Yeah. Okay.
Nice.
Well, the game is available digitally right now on Xbox, Switch, PlayStation for $20. Andy, what do you think?
Oh, I had so much more to say about it, but
oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't know you had more to go.
No, I mean, it's like I was saying, I mean, it's basically a shoot 'em up, but you'll guide your ship. It's armed with all manner of special weapons, through 8 levels in total, across outer space, through the city, down into an underground alien lair, back up into outer space again, with hopefully enough time to kind of like wash off all the alien funk from before. Levels usually consist of you paying an absurd amount of attention to either like pickups or to like enemy fire or even just enemy ships like coming your way too. You'll be armed with a simple blaster along with some special weapons. You have like things like a fire cannon, laser beams, drop bombs, rockets. So you kind of start off you can carry 2 special weapons and then switch between them. Those also can be upgraded by collecting little green gems that pop up on the screen after defeating an enemy. And then between each unit, if you're smart like me, you get the option to find like little collectible upgrade kits that you can use to boost like the power and defense of your ship. You can increase the weapon level. You can use it to gain an extra life. The game is really, really tough too. So I tried it on normal and then I tried it on hard just to like see like the difference in it. And I went all the way back to easy because that was the only one that I could really like make any headway on too. But yeah, it is a very heavy action, lots of stuff going on in it. Honestly, the game is really, really fun, really cool. And it kind of carries over as well too. So if you get all the way to the end on easy mode, then you can start normal mode and it just kind of resets everything, but you have all the upgrades that you gathered on easy mode, which is really, really nice. So you have kind of a little more of a fighting chance too. But honestly, I loved it. I thought it was great. There's also challenges, like challenge modes in there too. So you can try to survive a level or try to beat the boss faster, you know, or do anything like that, which is kind of fun. But, you know, it's a pretty basic game. Just a shoot 'em up, you know, 8 levels of shoot 'em up. So, and it looks beautiful. So, yeah, I mean, go for it. I thought it was really nice, really fun, dude. I enjoyed it.
Cool. So it's a buy it?
Buy it.
I will. What do you think of that?
I did.
Nice.
Chris, $20. Digital, buy it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
100 physical, buy it.
don't think you can now.
No way. No.
Missed out. Sucks for you.
Yeah. Let me see. I'll check that right quick.
Pre-order stopped like 4 years ago.
Sold out.
Yep. There you go. Next up, Candy Rangers, developed by Meccano, published by Jandu Soft, released October 9th. Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Go on a single-player on-rail shooter adventure in Candy Rangers and match 4 colors with 4 rangers. Ranger could take down enemies that match their color, and it's up to you to use each one accordingly. Can you match them all? For now, did you match them all?
Hell no, I'm literally playing it right now because I'm frustrated, but this game was a complete surprise. I shall. So, as you said, it's an on-rail shooter where you are simultaneously controlling 4 different rangers, though technically they are kind of moving in unison with a few exceptions that the game throws at you. And the overall...
That's a new one.
And in this context of the game, though, as the characters are moving along, you'll be marching along a general path that is laid out before you. And as this is happening, enemies will pop up all over the freaking place. And those enemies are sometimes flying towards you to do damage. Other times they're just flying around because, I mean, it's nature. I guess bugs bug out and stuff out there. But regardless of which, your job is to kill them because you're a Candy Ranger. And that's what Candy Rangers do. And the way that you do that is by engaging them in gun combat using 1 of 4 button presses. Each one corresponds to a different ranger. The bullets themselves also have a different style of how they perform. For example, if you press the X button, yes, the left button on the crosshair that they show on the game's reticle, you'll fire off an X or cross bullet pattern. So you'll take out enemies in the cross pattern. If you fire the Y or up blue, or rather, you're green, rather, you'll fire a bullet that goes straight up, and it's like kind of like a vertical blast of bullets. Blue or down is like a sort of like side slant, and then or like downward slant, and then the red with the final one is a horizontal slant. Even though they have these cool patterns, if the enemy's color type says blue, you gotta kill them with the blue bullet type. So even if you feel like, oh, this would have been really useful to use the cross, doesn't matter. Bad boy is blue. Kill it with the blue. Reason why is because the entirety of the scoring mechanism in this game depends on you keeping that combo. And this game is really freaking mean about that junk, too. I've gotten decently far in the game, but here I am still on level 1 because I really want to get a 5-star. Did I say 5-star? Yeah, this bucks the 3-star trend. This game is about 5 stars. And in a really both mean and also merciless manner, they show you, you start the level with the 5-star ranking. And the moment you screw it up, the game shows you in real time, whoop, you just lost the 5-star ranking. Maybe we'll hit that restart button, which is good because it saves me time. I don't have to wait to the end to know how poorly I did. But as you're walking around the level, you'll be killing these guys. Occasionally, you'll come across items on the ground that can, like, you know, basically are good for, like, giving you more points or extending the time on the clock because you can run out of time on a stage. And sometimes you even have to engage with maneuvering the characters. Yeah, you can't make them walk up, down, left, right, but you can make them jump, double jump, and parry bullets. So this game does hit you with a lot to keep track of on certain levels. And given the fact that the rhyme and reason of where the enemies come from is all over the place, furthermore so. I mean, you could be walking down the path and a monster could pop up literally right in front of your line. And your reticle's all the way across the screen. Tough taters, baby. You about to get hit unless you remembered it was there and was ready to go. But therein lies the rub, and that's kind of how these games go. But with that said, I'd be lying if I told you this game was nowhere near fun, because that is quite the opposite. This game is legitimately good. The soundtrack is a bop. It's genuinely kind of addictive. Like, I would not have, if I saw this on an eShop, I probably would have passed it by. But having gotten a chance to play it, I do believe this game deserves more love than blind purchaser would likely give it. I think this is worth actually trying out. And it gets to be really tough. So it's also not a simple game. You could probably get decently far enough or even clear the game going for like bare minimum scores just to see the game through. But if you decide you want to score chase or rank chase, saddle up, baby, because you're in for a ride. But it's a ride worth taking. So, yeah.
All right, $15, official verdict.
Buy it. I had a good episode today. Everything's been buy it. So there you go. Here's another one.
Very good.
Candy Rangers, Candy Rangers. I wish that was the song.
Next game to talk about, Hula Hula Wii, developed and published by Aphil Games. Released October 7th, Xbox One, Series X and S, and Xbox PC, $5 each. Tropical puzzles, fruity explosions. Haha, Jacob's here for that one. In Hula Hula Wii, every level is a refreshing mix of logic and fun. Push coconuts across colorful maps, smash them into pineapple towers, and watch as they burst together into delicious pina coladas. The rules are simple, but challenge keeps growing. Slide coconuts carefully, plan your moves, undo mistakes infinitely, and use bonfires to burn obstacles out of the way. To complete a stage, you'll need to destroy every pineapple tower and outsmart each tricky layout. The adventure game spans 30 levels across 3 vibrant settings. Start on Coco Island. Hey, Coco's the kitty that's out front. I took her pictures in our Discord. She's beautiful. I love her face. Where the basics are introduced with lighthearted challenges. Then head to Hula Beach, where the new twists like craters force coconuts to stop mid-path. Finally, climb the Fire Tower, the toughest destination, where bonfires add a fiery layer of strategy to your quest. With its tropical theme, playful mechanics, and clever progression, Hula Hula Wee is the perfect puzzle getaway for anyone who loves a mix of brains and beach vibes. Aki, we know you are all about the beach vibes. Tell us what's going on in Hula Hula Wee.
Okay, so this is basically what you said about it.
That is and the point of those intros.
Yeah. Sadly for Aphil Games, there's not a lot to add to it. This one is surprisingly one of the slightly harder ones, unless you're using a walkthrough.
What kind of game is it? Is it like the slide puzzle, the Sokoban puzzle? Like, which one is this one?
This is one where you push an object and it goes until it hits something. And some of these levels are actually kind of difficult. I actually got stuck in it a few different times. And I haven't 100%ed this one yet because I got stuck in it. This is
good.
Hey, I've 100%ed basically all the other ones. Okay, leave me alone. I haven't been able to finish one of them. And I got most of the way through it, just not all the way. I appreciate that it has a little difficulty. I approve because most of these are a piss take. So, yeah. That's about all there is for this.
I don't know if this is like a quote-unquote reskin or not, but whatever graphic style they went with this one, I think is really cute. I think it has a good visual look to it, a fun, colorful vibe. Like, a lot of these just feel the same. This one, it looks different. It looks...
Yeah, even when you get to other environments, it still has this nice, vibrant look. Because originally you start off at, like, inside... It's different tiles that kind of look like sand, kind of look like maybe you're in a house, something like that, with brown dirt around that you smack stuff into. But later on, you get introduced to other environments, and one is like the inside of a volcano. It's all this really bright, vibrant orange and stuff. It's very pretty. I really appreciate the visual design of this game. It's a very pretty game.
All right. Is there anything else that you would like to add about this game? Thoughts, questions, concerns?
We can use more hula skirt girls in video games, just in general.
The next game can be Hula Tula Wee.
Please never speak again.
I have to. The game is $5 per platform. If you buy it in the next couple of days, I think it goes for another week, you could get it for $3.99, but at $5, what are your thoughts? Hula Hula Wee.
I absolutely love the name of this. I'm totally for this, as long as it isn't just a reskin. Because, again, I'm not the person who knows whether these are reskins. Because once I've finished it, it's immediately out of my mind again.
Got my 2K. I will never think about you again.
Exactly.
There's a title the update. Welcome back into my life, Ava.
Yeah, that does happen occasionally.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about on this episode. We're going to Kids Corner. George, take it away.
Kids Corner! With Jacob and friends.
One of these days, I'll make like a 5-second version of that so I could play it on the soundboard instead of just, you know what I mean.
You ought to speed it up so it sounds like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
That would actually be kind of awesome.
So,
reminds me kind of like Hamster Dance.
Keep going. Anyway. Keep going.
No, we're good.
I'm good. I can't do more, otherwise we have to pay the license.
You started digging that hole, buddy. I'm going to let you dig and dig and dig. All right.
No, just bury him in it.
I mean, I wasn't really big on Hamster Dance. I was more of the two guys that did the Quiznos ads.
The moon, but not as much as a spoon.
Like those guys, those are great.
Yeah.
Rather good.
Yeah,
their music saved me. Thank you, rather good.
Badger, mushroom.
That is good too.
Snake, oh God, it's Snake.
I also like, the one about the going on a safari. Kenya.
Yeah.
Going to Kenya. They got lions. Like, I don't know. It was great.
That was my ringtone on one of my earliest IQ cell phones.
Dropping like a rock.
I feel like I need to do the intro again. So, George, take it away.
Kids Corner! With Jacob and friends!
final game tonight is Nicktoons and the Dice of Destiny. It's the whole reason Jacob's here. Developed by Petite Fabrique and Fairplay Labs, published by Game Mill Entertainment. Released September 30th on Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $49.99. It's also Play Anywhere on Xbox, because I was playing it on my PC earlier. Nicktoons and the Dice of Destiny is a vibrant universe-spanning mashup that brings iconic Nickelodeon heroes into a world of fantasy-style tropes and real-time RPG action. Get ready to roll the dice and dive into a wild, action-packed adventure with SpongeBob, Katara, Leonardo, and others as they swing spatulas, bend water, slice katanas, and more. Get ready for epic battles, dynamic environments, and recognizable character moments, all with an engaging gameplay experience for players of all ages. And speaking of players of all ages, we have all the mental ages here with the wise man Purnell and the young at heart Jacob covering this one.
That was a very nice way of
saying severely mentally handicapped.
I think the term
you're looking for. That's not a good way to start after
that. No. I think the term you were looking for is emotionally stunted.
Yeah, there we go.
That works too.
So Jacob, what's going on in Nicktoons and the Dice of Destiny before somebody says something I have to censor?
Again. So, Nicktoons and the Dice of Destiny is this. It's like an action RPG starring various Nicktoon characters. Now, before you get excited about this, keep in mind it's kind of limited. It's characters from Fairly Odd Parents, SpongeBob, Rugrats, Avatar, and
Ninja Turtles.
Thank you, Ninja Turtles. I'm like,
who the heck? Ninja Turtles.
Honestly, I used Leo quite a bit at the beginning, and then he didn't prove to be as useful, so I ended up swapping over to Timmy from Fairly Odd Parents. All right, hold on. I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. Anyways, so you're not going to be running into, like, Ren and Stimpy, Rocko, Invader Zim. Or I don't think you do. If he is, he's a hidden character. But anyway, so Timmy wishes that he could be in whatever the knockoff of Dungeons and Dragons is for his thing. And so his godparent or odd parents, whatever, fairy odd parent, whatever, the fairies, they grant him his wish, and he ends up in a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, and it's also pulled in other characters from other Nicktoons who are all like, oh, we don't know why we're here. But Timmy, of course, realizes, oh, it's me. And so we have to finish our quest. And, you know, once we do that, theoretically, everyone can go home. So it's up to this initial band that you get. And you will run into other characters, like you end up with Sokka from Avatar running a shop, and Pearl from SpongeBob. She's theoretically, she runs a shop, like they call it a shop, but it's really just she's who you go to if you want to swap out your characters. You have an overall level that as you gain experience goes up, but your character's powers can get upgraded eventually, which, I mean, for some of them, I would hope it turns out well, because there are some characters who at the very beginning, like, they're just horrendous, and I didn't want to play with them. And honestly, Timmy was kind of like that up until I got to about level 4, and then, like, I keep getting all over the place on this. So there are different character classes with this. Like, you have the warrior, you have mages, you have healers, all that kind of stuff. And you can swap out between the different characters as you need to. So like Leonardo, he's a warrior. SpongeBob is a knight.
I do want to say it is cute that you're so excited about this game that you're getting flustered.
It's because like I'm trying to give a very concise thing, but like the game is kind of all over, and I don't usually cover games with this kind of a depth, and so I'm just kind of like going all over the place with it.
Do you have any thoughts on
like as a kid? Like, hold up. Like as a kid's game, like it's surprise. Like this is a good, like, you know, my first action RPG or my first dungeon crawler kind of game. Like it's accessible and there is local co-op on it. And I know my kids were playing it, but, sorry, Pernell, you can go.
Okay. So the best way to describe this game is essentially Diablo with the ability to be played by people who aren't obsessed with the actual stat elements that come from Diablo. So the way this game generally works is that the flow is that there is a hub called Tangle, which is named after the fact that it's where all the different Nicktoon worlds collided at initially. This is where you go to do general upgrades, being, you know, purchases of weapons, which can be equipped. Each equip having their own stats associated with them. Sometimes they'll have various perks, and they come in the form of, like, you know, base level and then rare and epic, just like, you know, in a Diablo style game. There's an ability to purchase potions here as well, amongst other things. Potions in this game have an interesting use where that they're not too hard to come by, and they have passive effects such as like movement speeds, buffing, and critical damage increases over a period of time.
Honestly, you're going to be, as Pernell was saying, like they come, you come by all that kind of stuff pretty easy. Like, honestly, I never once ran out of gold currency. Like, as long as you go from point A to point B on every level, you're walking away with like a good chunk of change.
And so shopping will not be an issue.
On the topic of potions, I'm still kind of early in the game. I only just beat the first boss earlier today. I'm actually proud of myself because I played for more than a half hour before my arm got really sore. I haven't found a need for potions yet. I just sell them all.
Well, I mean, that's how it goes with any game. I'm playing
on
hard.
Like, I'm not playing on the easy. I was like, you know what? This is a kid's game. I'm going to see if I could like go into the hard stuff. And so far, I have found hard to be incredibly easy.
Well, I'm not going to hold that against the game, because the way I perceived it when I started playing it and getting into it was the fact that I look at hard as being what you'd be playing if you were playing base level difficulty in Diablo.
Yeah.
So, because it's meant to be a game.
I'd imagine if you get more people in the game, I would imagine the game scales in difficulty and enemies as well.
Absolutely. And of course, I'm sure the further you get in the game, there may be a point where difficulty scales up to the point where it's like, okay, you're getting a little bit of challenge out of this. But for the most part, I think the thing that's most important to take away from it is that the difficulty there's three difficulty settings when you choose a level. Easy, normal, and hard, basically. You know, I may have the names right, but that's essentially what it is. And it's meant to be balanced in such a way that if you come into it on, say, easy difficulty, chances are your team's level is going to be lower than, or going to be way higher than the actual recommended level. It's an easy, breezy way to get through a stage. Normal is probably where your level will actually be at that point in the game, and hard is if you're coming into it, you'll be under level, but chances are by the end of your run on that stage, your level may well catch up to the recommended level. So Basically, if you have experience with this stuff, play on hard. With that said, if you're playing with kids who don't know their A from their B, or their A attack from their B attack, I should say, just pick on any other one, because chances are that also means that the kids won't have too much difficulty and they won't be making a bunch of mistakes causing you to feel frustrated or whatever. Now, when you actually do a stage, though,
go ahead. I would just like to say this, like how both you and Joe are like, oh, yeah, you can just do this on hard. It's no problem whatsoever. I died on the first boss on easy.
You didn't have to admit that. We would not have ratted you out. You'd have been good, boy.
No, I don't know. I just find that kind of funny. But also, I mean, that's why I stopped using Katara, like, at least
that's
early on.
That's who I like, too. I like really? Katara.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. I thought she was terrible. Like, oh, I'd go
you
back
know
in with
not terrible?
Timmy.
Getting a sub. Thank you, Mr. Torrance, for gifting a sub to, you know, I'm going to mispronounce this one on purpose just for section. Shizy, thank you for gifting to them. I don't want to risk it.
So,
you know, if you're looking at, you know. So I can't say Doc Havoc, though. Mr. Torrance, thank you for the second gift sub this time to Doc Havoc. Ian will appreciate that. Thank you for the two gift subs. I really appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So now I'm before we get too far into the weeds, we should talk about the general like flow of a level, in that usually while you're playing the game, you may receive a form of a quest. Quest might say something like, I don't know, find my hat. I lost my hat somewhere within this location. Please get it. Or it might just tell you, go here and explore to get further into the world itself. But either way, you'll get requests. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, one of the quests is, like, you have to go retrieve the nerdy kid from Jimmy Neutron. You have to retrieve a clean pair of underwear for him. Like, there's another one where you have to retrieve Pearl's pom-poms so she could do her cheerleading for you. Like, so it's stuff like that. Like,
Jacob, you didn't want a sub, but Mr. Torrance subbed for you. Thank you, dang, Mr. Torrance, for another gift sub. You were awesome. We appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Mr. Torrance.
Enjoy the kitty cats and the emotes.
I'm just going to emote my face a bunch.
You should.
Boop, 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 boop. Done.
That is your... All right. What else y'all got to say about Nicktoons? I have a tiny gripe about this one, and I can understand. Wait.
Don't get into gripes yet. There's still a thing about worth describing about the game that makes it stand out. You got to get to that first.
Sorry.
So one aspect of the dungeon crawling that is unique from a lot of other games of this type that also fits in the theme of, you know, the Dice of Destiny or whatnot, is that as you play on a level, you'll generally come across a pillar, usually one or two per stage, that will offer you a sort of sub-challenge. The sub-challenge I don't know if the sub-challenge itself is random or not, or if it's set up in advance and you just don't know what it is. But either way, you'll get a challenge, and it might say something like, defeat all the enemies while dodging the hydro spires that are crashing up from the ground or whatever. As it rolls, that's what it is. It rolls a die. The die determines what the sub-challenge is, and it'll say, defeat all the enemies, dodge the incoming meteors or the pillars of water, what have you.
Or the meteors were so... the fireballs that follow you? That thing was annoying. That was honestly the only one I really found challenging. My favorite one was like the freeze ray that would like kind of like spin around, because I would run in as Timmy Turner and just like zap at everyone and then, you know, run away. But...
So, like you basically go through the hassle of resolving this. You'll get into a scuffle with a bunch of enemies while the condition's taking place. And if you manage to succeed, the game will then have another die roll, typical D20 roll. And I take it that D20 will determine what sort of bonus you get to, you know, various stats or whatnot. And then you'll also get loot from the treasure chest associated with the challenge. So it behooves you as the player to always engage these challenges, even if you're playing a difficulty a little above your station or whatever, just because, quite frankly, it's worth it. And in the event that you fail the challenge, you can attempt to do it again. But of course, depending on the difficulty you're playing on, you might come to regret that choice because you might be running low on healing potions or whatever. Ultimately, it's a nice twist to the game.
Doesn't your HP like slowly regenerate anyway, though?
If you're playing on hard every time and you haven't got your level caught up yet, that HP will kind of get outpaced by getting hit with fireballs over and over again, though.
Oh,
I don't know if your
HP regenerates. I believe it, like if you're wearing an armor, it can give you regeneration, but I believe normally you're going to have to use potions.
Keep in mind, he's playing on easy, so that might be condition.
Maybe.
Whenever someone says I'm playing on easy, you got to factor, and it could be all kinds of like things they throw to mitigate the challenge.
Very true.
Not insulting in any way, just stating it as it is. So.
I'm insulting enough.
Oh God! But ultimately, the challenges are fun. I will say, from personal experience, though, if you are playing at a higher difficulty than the level, that's the one downside to that, is that you may find yourself struggling a bit on completing the challenges. Because at that point, you may not be doing enough damage to kill the enemies before the time limit expires, for example. So keep that in mind if you decide to just, you know, go hard mode all day, every day. So But I will say this game, and I wonder if Jacob would before I say anything, did you get a chance to play in multiplayer? Because I feel like that's the one thing I was lacking in my experience with this game.
My kids
before, before we get there, I want to hit the bullet points on the store page real quick, get comments on them. Play as legendary Nickelodeon characters, fantasy style. I appreciate that the characters have cool designs to them, cool outfits. I know the pre-order version had, or the deluxe version had extra costumes that you could use. So I'm running around as Leonardo as a mummy. Do you like the style of the characters in the game?
I like the fantasy style. I do not like the art style. I really don't like how they tried to make everyone look similar. I mean, I get it for aesthetic purposes, but I just it drives me up the wall the whole time I'm playing it. Like, I'm enjoying it while I'm playing it, but like whenever they do a cutscene, it's like,
yeah. Do you appreciate that each hero comes with their own unique powers and weapons?
Unique.
I would hope they would, but I mean, like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry,
sir. This is Kids Corner. You were not allowed to say words like that, Mr. Jacob.
That's what the editing button's for.
That's the Mr. editing button's Jacob.
Sorry.
Tisk, tisk.
Real-time action-packed battles where you get to master each character's unique style and
Don't slow down, sir. He was offering me the question before he started cursing. I would say one thing worth mentioning to that is the fact that I think the thing that's worth most pointing out here is that the abilities and stats that the character or traits that the characters have are fairly well tuned to the characters themselves. So like Leonardo, most of his abilities are tuned to him working with dual swords and such. SpongeBob is rocking a spatula. So even though he's in a fantasy world, his main weapon as a knight is a spatula, which is very nice. It stuck with the theme of the character. And so on and so forth. So I feel like if you come into this game, you will find yourself going, who do I like? Oh, I like Legend of Korra. I'm going to pick this character. How do they play? Just like I'd expect them to. It's very nice in that way.
Yeah, but that's why I didn't like Katara, because I thought she should have been like the one with like some sort of like chain lightning power. I mean, obviously with water, but like, you know what I mean? Instead, all she's doing is just shooting it in straight lines. Like, water's supposed to be fluid. Like, why?
The West White Witch.
Why is it that Timmy is the one that actually has the one that acts most like water? Like,
she like a tidal wave early on in the game that works like a tidal wave.
I thought that was like an ice thing.
No, she gets a tidal wave.
I'm gonna have to look at that thing again because it looked like some sort of like an ice block.
Well, she gets an ice block too that will drop when you smack it, it will release like ice discs that hurt things around it. But no, one of her abilities is a tidal wave, and her water whip works like a waving whip, like so it's like waving fluid water.
So did you guys like the real time action packed battles?
I'm playing her wrong. I don't know. I did not have the same experience.
I like
the
real-time battles. We had different experiences. But no, I like those, too. I enjoy
the real-time action-packed battle going on about a character. Yeah.
All day, every day.
Explore whimsical worlds. Were they whimsical?
All right, hold up. I watched Avatar The Last Airbender with the kids. And my wife had already seen it, but I hadn't. And so like, we're all like discovering this show together. And so it's just like, I hold Avatar quite dear. And so it's just like, if they're going to show up in here, I want it to be, you know, as I remember it being on that kind of thing.
Who knows? And you might her up and she might become a beast and might be doing kind of some of the stuff you're thinking about. But early on, she's not going to be, you know, drowning enemies and stuff. She's just throwing tidal waves.
Come on, she could do blood bending. All right, like
kids' quarter.
What?
It's in order.
It's an episode. It's an episode.
Are they going to have blood in an E10 rated game?
Exactly. They're not going to have blood bending in this, even if the show had it. Come on, man.
I mean, they could. They just, you know, don't show. But
they won't.
Real-time action packed battle.
I mean, at the same time, though, yeah, they're not going to have it in this
like
kind of game.
I like those, too. I like real-time action packed battles, too.
Whimsical Worlds. Did you enjoy exploring Whimsical Worlds?
It was all right.
The worlds are pretty good.
I did not get sufficient whimsy from them.
They mentioned the epic boss battles against people like Angelica and Plankton, and intense boss battles where each fight offers unique mechanics and surprises.
Unique.
Did you like the boss battles?
Yeah. Seeing as I died
with under the first boss a couple of times with Katara, no, I wasn't having a good time.
What, did it feel epic with all the dying and such?
No, it was annoying.
I took out Plankton with Leonardo.
Whatever.
See Katara all day, every day in this house.
Level up and customization. I kind of wish there was more to that.
Yeah, it really felt like a lot of it. It was more cosmetic than anything.
Like I wish with level ups you got to assign your own skill points or something. I would put everything in damage. Oh well,
that's true.
Single player or local co-op for 1 to 4. This is where my gripe comes in. It's a $50 game. I really wish it had some form of online, whether it be friends only, no randoms, because I know some games do that. I believe Lego Party is like that. That would be fine, but like a $50 game, I think, should have online co-op.
I mean, I could see why it wouldn't. For the same reason that Outright doesn't do it for a lot of games.
Yeah.
I could see that. But at the same time, you could always have it so like there's room codes or something like that. Like,
I did tell Outright that I want NBA Bounce 2 to have online. Rebound.
Oh, yeah, for this inevitable sequel if this sells well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Built for Nickelodeon fans and action RPG lovers. I would say it's built for new Nickelodeon fans.
I will agree with that statement. Like, if you're looking for deep cuts, you're not going to find it in here.
Yeah, this is for your kids' version of Nickelodeon, not the parents' version of Nickelodeon. Despite the fact that we're the ones enjoying it. Any other thoughts on Nicktoons and the Dice of Destiny?
One thing I will say that I do appreciate for a time-saving element is that, from what I can tell, the characters kind of level up collectively. So,
yeah, they do.
So I'm glad to hear that confirmation, because I'm like, I think they're leveling up at the same time. Oh, well, I'll just keep going. But, yeah, it's kind of nice that they save you the trouble being like, I don't need to go and level up Leonardo. And I was like, no, I play the game, and as I level up, they work together, and they grow together. So you can just kind of freely switch between characters at your own leisure. And the only thing that really is tied to using a character at any given time is the equipment that they earn.
All right. Well, let's talk price on this one. It is $49.99. There is a $59.99 deluxe edition that includes new costume for each of the 9 playable characters. You start with 5. You got to unlock the other 4. The DLC itself is $15. So you save $5 buying the deluxe edition. $50 on the game, $60 on deluxe. What do you think? Is it worth the costume pack, or just grab the game, or nothing? What do you think?
I'm not gonna lie, I like the costume pack didn't exactly wow me. Like, it wasn't bad, but I'm glad I got it for free.
And in my context, I would say the game as a whole, absolutely a buy. I think this game is a lot of fun.
Oh,
and even if you don't like even if you aren't one-to-one familiar with all the Nicktoons as they are, I feel like the game is fun enough that you can develop an appreciation for them doubly. So if you have kids and you're like, how do I bridge the gap between what my kids watch and what I used to watch? Well, here you go. The costumes, though, this is par for the course for me, but I've never been big on like paying for DLC costumes and the like, so I'm not going to jump on. They get it on a good sale, though. Yeah, knock yourself out. Or if your kids want it, then go for it. Otherwise, I could do without.
But yeah, like game, I recommend it. It's fun and it's a good entry for small kids.
Or absolutely smaller kids. Agree. I think $50, even with the lack of online, it's just a really fun game. I love action RPGs and the fact that I get to play as Leonardo and beat up floating blobs is amazing. So, yeah, I'm with you guys. That is it for this episode. We are going to play some kind of, I don't know what music I'm going to, maybe Ninja Turtles. Maybe Ninja Turtles. Oh.
T-U-R-T-L-E power. He's Leonardo. He's the leader of the turtles. Blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about.
I should play that. Something from that 80s.
That's what I'm talking about.
Deep dive. Another shell.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
What is Vanilla Ice going to do? Come at you now? He don't care no more.
Oh, no, not Vanilla Ice. No.
No, the turtles coming out of the shell. Yeah. Oh,
God. That freaking thing.
By the way, did you... you mentioned Leonardo in a mummy outfit. Did you know that's an actual toy? That's a reference to a toy.
Nice.
Yeah. There was also
the weird turtles toys.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the newer ones, like from 2017. But Raphael was a mummy back in 1993 as part of the Universal Monsters set.
I was about to ask if one of them was part of that.
I'm going to go on a limb and say you did not know that off the top of your head. You looked that up.
No, I did. I looked it up to confirm. Oh, my God. It. Yeah.
More so the year, I mean. Not that you knew about the... I'm saying you knew about the figure. I'm talking about the date for the figure. You did not know the date.
No, I did, because I was... In 1993, I was a big-time, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toy collector.
The also so I knew...
Did you ever get the Star Trek ones?
No, I didn't. But, you see, if anybody remembers, the original, like... run of the Turtles action figures on the, they always included a catalog of whatever else was around. So it's like, I would look at the catalog for like all the time and be like, ooh, I want this one and that one and this one. So yeah, I knew about the Monster Turtles back in the 90s.
Like, I remember when the Star Trek ones got advertised in like the Star Trek Next Generation magazine, and my brother and I were so psyched and we never, ever saw them. Ever. Like, we wanted them so bad, and then I've like later on found out like we didn't have a snowball's chance of ever getting them.
Kids Again, what? Jacob. Kids Corner.
What? What did I do?
The H word.
No.
But that's a place.
Ooh, those Star Trek figures are they're not too bad, but yeah, they're a little expensive.
Wait, okay, we're ending the show. Does anyone have any final words to end the show so that we could start the show and get this all finished?
My kids!
Power. He's Leonardo. He's the leader of the turtles. He gets down, busting up heads, though. Two blades in his hand, he gets slicing. Cut him up, baby. Gonna give us some sushi. That's the episode. Wrap it up. Done.